Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Wood Talk, crafting artisanal sawdust since 2007. Now here are your hosts, Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right, it is show number 531, and on today's show, we're talking about cherry color change, tongue oil finishing, our chainsaw mill sketchy, and Mark's firehouse thingy. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler is giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before October 31st. At rockler.com/woodtalk.
Go Rockler.
And if you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. This episode, we're thanking all of our patrons, apparently, because there's no one there to thank. So thank you to all of our amazing patrons who have been with us for a long time and didn't even know we quit and came back.
Can this be like the podcast version of an IOU? We want to thank them, but we don't have the names listed yet. So we're lucky to do a show this week.
They're all there. They know who they are.
You know who you are.
Thank you.
No, we will thank you. It may be on the next show or the one after that or the one after that. But yeah, I got some homework to do. Truthfully, I forgot to do that in my show prep, and that's my fault.
So. I forgot to look until you were like halfway through your Rockler thing.
I was halfway through my Rockler thing and I said, oh crap. Tried not to let it screw me up as I realized I did not get the names, but
that's we'll do it. We promise. That's good. Yeah. I like it.
Well, look, it's been a long time. It's been a whole month of no shows. Me moving was definitely a little traumatic on the podcast front. I didn't really have great internet options and finally got settled. And honestly, you guys, it's weird. T-Mobile of all things bailed me out of my internet conundrum here at the house. The option that I had when I moved in was DSL, and not just DSL, but 1.5 megabit per second DSL. And that's
from 20 years ago.
That's the download. Like, that's a stage above dial-up.
That was broadband, like when broadband was new.
Yeah. Yeah, I did, and it certainly doesn't, you know, even meet the government's minimum standards for like what broadband is, which is kind of low to begin with in the U.S. So yeah, that was my option. And then just talking to some neighbors, we found out that T-Mobile put up a tower here and they have a home internet thing that works off of their 5G network. And we looked into it. They said, you know, we're at capacity. Sorry, guys, just join the waiting list. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, we're on a waiting list for fiber connection. We're on a waiting list for Starlink. We're on a waiting list for everything. So we were getting ready to embark on this new lifestyle of not having internet at home. And then someone told us that if you contact this special guy, you got to call this guy in Missouri and tell him that you're a business. And suddenly everything changes. And I did that. I contacted this dude at T-Mobile, told him it's for a business, and suddenly there was capacity. And we were able to get a connection that is totally reasonable, seems to be working, and I think we'll be able to do the show from here. And it's all, I mean,
it's 3.5 megabits.
It's a whole 3.5. It's super weird. It is weird. It's sometimes you do a test, it's very inconsistent, but there are times where I'll get like 50 down and then 50 up. It's like symmetrical, like fiber in that way, yet it's all wireless. It's totally weird. But we're having a conversation, so it can't be all that bad. It seems like it's
doing okay. I got to admit, I didn't even know T-Mobile was still a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're still
T-Mobile
around.
Is kind of like what, your third tier, fourth tier, you know, provider for cell phones. I would not have gone with T-Mobile. But in this particular location, AT&T and Verizon, kind of a dry spot here. And T-Mobile found, you know, the spot and said, okay, we'll go in there and put up a tower. And now everybody in this neighborhood has this service. It's pretty interesting. But the great thing is now I go anywhere else because I got T-Mobile on my phone. I go anywhere else in a populated area and my signal sucks, but everybody else has, you know, I have five bars. So yeah, that's part of the joy of, being
don't
here.
Go to populated areas. There you go. You're welcome.
Right. I generally avoid those anyway. So
sounds like a good life plan in general.
Yeah. All right. So the what's on the bench segment is going to be kind of an extended segment because I figure there's going to be quite a bit to talk about. You know, obviously the reason for the delay in the shows was the fact that I was moving, but also not just moving, you know, house stuff, but moving shop stuff into a new firehouse space, which actually, you know, as we're recording this, this just happened. The closing of the firehouse was very delayed. I had like a good 3 weeks of just kind of getting the house up to speed before the closing of the firehouse. And finally, this past week, we did close, got the keys, and started the process of moving in. But moving into this space it's the actual move itself is sort of delayed too, because we have to make the place habitable. It's an older building. There's a lot of questions about, you know, safety related things. We have to make sure that it's okay to touch the water, that it's not radioactive. did you guys see the video I posted of the filter mm-hmm. unit? Oh boy,
there's some stuff in there. It's a little
dirty. I thought you'd gotten into like throwing pottery.
Yeah,
it looked like you were.
It did. Yeah,
looking down on.
I wasn't sure what I was looking at first.
Uh huh.
Right.
Oh.
So it's on a well.
Oh no.
And anyone who's on a well, you kind of know this is sediment can happen. It's certainly something that can happen. The date on this filter that
sediment happens.
Yeah, sediment does. That's my new T-shirt. The date on it says, make sure you change. Like they have they did the date of when it's supposed to be changed. Then someone crossed it out when it was changed and you're supposed to then put the next date. The last date that's on there is 2011.
Oh God.
So there's potentially 11 years of sediment in this thing. So it's like, it looks like a lot that the water source might just be bad, but I think it's literally it's 10, 11 years of it just sitting there not being changed. And yeah, of course, that much sediment can certainly build up. So I'm in the process of replacing the filter and then testing the water. We've got all kinds of environmental testing going on. Lead, asbestos, what else did we do? VOCs for the main bays. I just want to make sure, you know, what we're doing there is going to be safe. And if we drink the water, you know, we're not going to keel over. It's just a lot of that has to happen for me to feel comfortable in a space like this. But it's weird. I mean, it's a big garage with some living space in the back. And I know what to do with a garage. It's just that this is a different garage. It's very different than what I'm used to. 14-foot ceilings, cinder block walls. It's a lot to consider. So my plan at this point is to kind of keep it in a two-phase process. Phase one is get in there and start working. Plug in some tools, try to get some dust collection set up. Because I don't know if you guys noticed, but my quote unquote dream shop build never really materialized into the perfect wood shop for me. It was still just a big open space because I was scared to commit to doing anything. And I have to make sure that I kind of balance that this time because I need to commit. I need to get it there. But I'm not the kind of person who could walk into a brand new space and immediately execute a vision. I know exactly what I want to do, where everything goes. I need to live in that space for a while first. So that's phase one. And then phase two will be kind of perfecting things, getting tools exactly in the right location, getting the ductwork for the dust collection set up. I'm curious with you guys, if you were given a space, just a large open space, do you have in your mind exactly what you would need? Would you be comfortable executing like the finalization of things on day one?
Yep.
No.
Matt, you strike me as the kind of guy who would.
Well, thanks, I guess.
Shannon, you're more reasonable like me. And you wouldn't.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. I just lack imagination.
Yeah. Well, like I'm watching like Johnny Brooke, for instance. He's doing a transformation of a space that needs a whole lot more TLC and rehab than mine does. His videos on that, if I haven't mentioned them before, the documentation of his shop build out is pretty fantastic. So if you want to go watch that on the Crafted, is that what's the channel? His official channel name, Crafted something
Workshop,
Crafted Workshop. So anyway, really good. But it's very clear to me that Johnny has a vision and Johnny knows exactly what he wants, where he wants it. And I'm scared to death to commit to that before I'm confident in it. Like my Denver workshop, I was there for 6 years. And I would say in the past year, I finally got that space to be outfitted the way I thought it, you know, was the most, the best version of itself in a way. It took me a while to get there, and I'll get there with this space too, but I don't think in the first year, I don't think I'm going to get there. I just don't feel comfortable committing. So
no, I'm like you, I gotta like live in it, work in it.
Yeah. There's workflow like my issues. Like you gotta experience it.
I mean, I reorganized the interior of my tool cabinet 7 times before I finally got like everything exactly where I wanted. I had to like build out of it, work out of it before I could figure that out. So yeah. And like you, my shop is kind of where I need it right now, but that's only because I'm so constrained on space.
Right.
I think if I went the other direction and I was given a big old huge thing, it would be just like overwhelm.
Yeah.
And I would end up with like my same shop footprint, like squished over into the corner.
Right.
Like this huge, huge space around.
Maybe that's what I should do. Like just copy the old setup and put it in whatever square footage it takes up and just leave the rest open.
Yeah. Flex space. Put like a slot car racing track in the rest of the spot, you know, or like a dog agility course, like Dougie and Abby.
That sounds good. Go nuts. I could always use that. So yeah, what
Dougie
what,
doing agility. I want to see that.
He could do it. That guy can do anything.
Roll over. Just lay in your
I'll
back.
Tell you, the dogs are really like, talk about getting a lifestyle upgrade. We had like a postage stamp for a backyard, and there was a walkway through the backyard in Denver. And the dogs would just sit out there all day and bark at people. Like that was what they did. And they didn't get a lot of exercise until we went out for a run or a walk. Here it's totally different. They're on a invisible fence system on acreage and they love it. Like these two just spend most of their day outside. You just let them out and they just sit on the porch and watch people go by. They are having a great time.
As the wind blows.
And the only thing is like Abby worries me a little bit. She's eating frogs. And I know like certain frogs and toads can be poisonous to dogs. And she doesn't seem to care. And I'm trying to stop that from happening. That's making me a little bit nervous. Oh, geez. And not to get on too much of a tangent, but one of the things that happened when we probably were here for about a week is related to the dogs. Abby started to throw up, and over 24 hours of vomiting, we got her into a vet. They got her in quickly, did exploratory surgery, and found that her spleen was twisted and doing stupid things, doing backflips in her belly. Had to have her spleen removed and like just emergency surgery the week after we got here. We were like, you know, just thought she had eaten something, but no, this would have happened if we were in Denver too. But just really crappy timing on that. So
wow.
Thankfully she's all healed up.
Solidarity, sister.
Yeah, that's right. We talked about this. Did you guys know that Shannon had had a spleen situation due to a sword? Right?
A spleen situation.
He had a sword situation and a spleen situation.
Yeah, I was run through. It was
it wasn't by me, by the way. No, we did not have a duel.
It was during Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, a production in my freshman year in high school. And it technically wasn't run through, but it was a sword. It was a stage sword, and it caused because I wasn't actually stabbed. It was the hilt of the sword that was driven into my gut, which caused the floating rib to kind of compress.
Oof.
And as the floating rib expanded back out, the tip of it grabbed the spleen and just gripped down the end. So, yeah. But I did the show, you know, went ahead.
The show must go on. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was like, it was like... you know, you've been punched in the gut really hard. And it was like, and the wind was knocked out of me and I kind of felt nauseous for a while. And then you'd sit and you're like, okay, I'm okay. I feel kind of weak. You know, I'm going to be bruised or whatever. And I thought maybe I'd bruised a rib or something. So I did the show, had the cast party at my house. Keeping in mind, I'm bleeding internally at this point. So we're like, we're like in the hot tub, you know, doing like high school kid things do, you know, hey, good show. And yeah, it was like the next morning. I'm like, I don't feel so good. I should go to the hospital. Doctor's like, how are you alive? Like, all of the blood in your body is now in your abdominal cavity.
Yikes. Just
hanging out, not circulating. Yeah.
Ow.
But, you know, the good news is since the spleen is, it's a blood filter, it's part of your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's ever like shortages on vaccines, like we haven't had this in a while, but like there it was difficult to get a flu shot for a while. You know, the all out, you know, oh, I'm sorry, we're entirely out. And I'd say, well, I don't have a spleen. Oh, look, we just found one for you.
It's in great. The back closet. Fantastic. We had an extra. Yeah.
Yeah. It's real easy. So, you know, if you're into vaccines, you can get them real easy.
Well, all you got to do is have your spleen removed. You get in the front of the line.
That's it.
Nicely done.
That's it.
Well, and before, I guess before we move on from the firehouse stuff, the other adjustment thing that's happening here is like the people. It's, and also having a commercial space. So where we're located, it's near another intersection. It's very clear that this place has been unoccupied for a long time because it is the neighborhood place to turn around with your car.
Yeah.
And they are so used to it. And here's the other thing. We did this yesterday. We were trying to find a diner to go eat, and Nicole drove past it, needed to kind of get her bearings. So she pulls into like a mechanics shop and pulls into the parking lot. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is the mentality, because I have the other side of it as the owner of the property. I'm going, what is the deal with people doing this? And then we did it ourselves. And I'm like, that's why. When you see a commercial property, people think it's public property. Like, it's okay to go turn around in that parking lot because it's not a house. So I'm like trying to rationalize all that in my head and try to be reasonable. But it's also kind of, I don't know, something about it is a little bit annoying to see people constantly doing this. But I'm trying to like be neighborly and be nice, because I'm also getting a lot of people just stopping by just to say hi and to ask me questions. And that's also something I'm not used to at all.
So, are they disappointed when they find out you're not a fireman?
No, I think everybody knows that. I mean, this place has been owned a couple different times, by other businesses that were not, you know, fire related. So they're not surprised at all. I mean, also they take one look at me and they go, yeah, this guy's not brave enough to be putting out fires. So it's pretty clear when they see me, but like having people just randomly stop by. And then of course, everybody's a woodworker, right? To some extent, especially if you go out into like rural America, they all have a story about the woodworking that they did. And you know, you're trying to be nice and you got work to do, but they're telling you all kinds of stories and I'm trying to be, you know, cool about it. So a little bit of an adjustment to that, to being friendly to strangers and having people just randomly zipping through the parking lot because they're trying to turn around. So that's a good time. But anyway, lots to come. Got, you know, we're going to try to film some of the content. I'm not going to turn into, you know, Cremona's channel,
never documenting, full, you know,
every little thing. Definitely. We already established that a long time ago. You don't go full Cremona and I have no intention of doing that, but you know, we got a bunch of little projects that have to be done. So we'll do that. And dude, I caught up with your video. I got your notification today and saw the latest video. You guys trimming out the deck area.
Oh my God, so much trim.
It is. A lot of trim.
Four episodes of just exterior trim.
Yeah. I like the mattress ad though. And I got to thinking as I'm watching, part of your sales pitch, was it Helix? Is that the name?
Yeah, it was Helix.
Okay. Like part of the sales pitch, you were like, it's great because you and your partner can go in and each put in your sleep preferences, and Lindsay's a stomach sleeper and you said you're a side sleeper. And it crossed my mind in a different dimension, you know, perhaps I also sleep on the side. You and I would have a better time with a mattress than you and your wife.
We're more compatible sleepers.
We are compatible. Yeah. We would have the exact same mattress and be happy about it.
Oh, that's so nice.
Wow.
That would be beautiful.
I don't know where to go with that information.
So let Lindsay know. There might be competition, you know, for the sleep position comfort thing. She'll be happy about that.
This is going to go well.
Like, this all happened while I was on the toilet too.
Why are you talking to this guy? This is what she's going to say.
Right. I'm not sure you should keep doing this wood talk thing.
There's not enough positivity coming out of this relationship anymore. Oh, nothing boy. Useful. Okay. Anyway. So what do you say we jump into a little bit of kickback here? Is it Simon? Yeah, I think Simon has some advice on zoning, which is completely irrelevant now.
Hey guys, Simon Rios here from Boston. In reference to your zoning issues, Mark, my advice to you is hire a land use attorney. We went through something similar about 4 years back. We bought a house with a horse barn that we wanted to turn into another house. It wasn't allowed under the zoning, but I called the head of the planning board to ask whether it might be an allowed use. They recommended I hire a lawyer, gave me the number of somebody who was really connected in town. had been the head of the select board and was a well-known land use attorney here in town. So anyway, that ended up costing, I think, $500, which for an attorney is ridiculous. And this person was so effective. So again, my advice to you would be to hire somebody who knows what they're doing on this front, who knows the players, who knows the town zoning, and they'll get you to where you need to be. Keep up the show, guys.
All right. I'll get right on that.
Yeah. Maybe he'll tell you you shouldn't be there before you get too involved.
Yeah, maybe I'll just bail on the whole horse barn plan and do something else. Sounds like a good idea. But seriously, thank you for that. And of course, we're kind of late to the game getting back into the show. So, you know, some of the feedback we had was kind of irrelevant at this point. But that was a nice voicemail. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
okay, Shannon, Simone. You want to grab this other one?
Yeah, I actually dropped this in here because I mentioned this on the Lumber Update show as well. And I wanted to put it in here because it is a public safety thing. I got this message from Bart, who basically says, no more river tables because epoxy is bad for your health. And there's a link that I'll post in the show notes that points to kind of the technical details. But BAGE, or bisphenol A diglycetyl ether, is also found in epoxy. I don't think this is really anything new.
Yeah,
I mean, if you really look at like a jar of epoxy or two jars of epoxy, bottles, whatever you want to call them, there's really not really any mystery that there's probably something bad in there for you. The smell of epoxy as it's curing and the fact that it's so exothermic kind of makes you go, ooh, it's not all natural. But it apparently is quite carcinogenic. And I myself started thinking about the last time that I mixed up some epoxy, just, 5 minute stuff for gluing, metal to wood or something like that. And I wasn't wearing a respirator. And really, the more I read this article, it was kind of like reading, Bill Pence, like on wood dust.
Yeah, that makes you want to
reading
get
that,
out of.
You're like, I'm like, I'm never going to go in my shop ever again.
Yeah.
Like, I must be already dead. Like right now. Mm-hmm. So reading this and digging into a little bit more, I just realized, yeah, there's some kind of nasty stuff off gassing as epoxy cures, and there's every possibility that some epoxies are better than others. But the upshot to this is, put on a respirator when you're mixing epoxy, when you're applying epoxy, and if preferable, like not a wood dust respirator, like a chemical respirator, because there is a lot of stuff. And whether it's carcinogenic or not, if it's not, it's still something else bad. And it was kind of interesting because I was looking at my own self and thinking, I rarely use epoxy. And when I do, I never put on the respirator. And maybe that's okay because I rarely use it. But at the same time, it's just I'm good about like putting on the respirator when I like run the planer and things like that. I've gotten that habit in my head, but I don't think about that when it comes to using epoxy or glue at all.
But well, you're also using extremely small quantities of it too,
Oh, no doubt.
Just as long as you have a little bit of fresh air.
It's a habit. It's a habit to get into. Yeah. And you look at the number of people who, are doing epoxy pours and things like that. How many of them are wearing respirators? I have seen some who are wearing respirators. Good on you, but just good public safety announcement there.
It is interesting because it is something where the trend and the uptick in usage of epoxy, we've talked about this on the cost of epoxy, but this is something that we've never touched on.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
different cost.
Yeah, it's a different kind of cost, but like the trend becoming popular, developing this sort of cavalier attitude toward it. I've always had an interesting respect for epoxy because it's expensive, because it's a two-part mixture. Anytime you have a two-part mixture of anything, you should kind of be a little bit like, I mean, and Rubio is in that category too. It's also a two-part mixture where you start to think, well, what's going on there chemically? Epoxy is just something that I've always respected and always used in small quantities. If I do anything with heat with epoxy, absolutely. I've got fresh air and a respirator on. And you see people who, especially just in the last 10 years, with this uptick, there is a very cavalier attitude with the treatment of epoxy, where it's just like this harmless material mixing with no gloves and mixing in huge, huge quantities that they're just huffing as they're standing around the shop. It is interesting. Definitely something to think about.
I think it's a good, you'd said it, anytime you're mixing something, it's kind of a red flag, because like the same thing would apply to, what's this stuff called? Unibond.
Veneer glue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. stuff.
And that's got like fiberglass in it. Just in like atomized fiberglass. So
formaldehyde.
Yeah, anytime you're mixing something, lots of that. Although I wonder how much of that anymore, because now Tosca compliance is pretty much global. I imagine they'd have to have that down. Well, regardless.
It's like hard to buy anymore too, isn't it? Like everything's Unibond
I don't think it's really the preferred source anymore. Like UltraCat water-based, I think performs just as well, and it's water-based. So it's just, you know, just the same thing with so many finishes trying to become greener.
Yeah.
I think the same thing's happened in that market, and it's, you know, if it doesn't have at least some sort of, call it greenwashing if you will, but if it doesn't have something to that effect in on the can, you know, people aren't interested anymore. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just something to think about. Good rule of thumb. If you have to mix it, wear a respirator.
Yeah.
That All includes right. your pancake batter.
Then you know where you should go? You know where you should go to get that respirator?
Aha. Uh-huh. Very well done.
I'm desperate for a tie-in. That wasn't that great. Well, Rockler is a sponsor of the show, even though we skipped a month, and they're hanging with us, which is good news. You know, this is something I've been thinking about. I got to look into their system. They have shop stands. You can create the perfect cabinet, work table, or shop cart system for your workshop. The new Rock Steady shop stand kits from Rockler feature strong, heavy gauge steel construction and pre-drilled holes for easy assembly and accessorizing. These are the best workshop stands in the business. Mix and match shop stand dimensions to suit your needs. Choose from one of Rockler's complete kits or select individual shop stand components and accessories. Rockler's Rocksteady Shop Stand Configurator makes it easy to design and shop for the perfect custom workshop stand. You know I got to go look at this, because now I got space, baby. Space is always a problem. Like,
got space.
You look at these great like assembly tables and mobile workstations and things like that, and I'm like, yeah, that's great if you have room for it. And I never really do. And this kind of thing could be really, really handy for like specialized, you know, accessories, shop stands, things to roll around for workstations. I think this is great. I'm going to go look at it, and I'm going to configure some.
Configure.
I'm going to start some configure.
Yeah, I looked at this because I was looking to actually not in my workshop, but in my bike shop next door to my workshop. That's just a mess. Like, yeah. I've got my workshop perfectly well organized, and my like bike mechanic tools are scattered everywhere and in random toolboxes. So I was going to trick out kind of part of my laundry room next door. And there's that, I know you went through this, Mark, where it's kind of like, well, yes, I could build all the cabinets, or I could just go and buy a bunch of cabinet boxes and be done with it.
Yeah.
And I was looking at all this, that, and I love just the blue Rockler pegboard. I mean, who wants to use boring white pegboard or brown pegboard when you can have blue pegboard?
I like blue.
Good stuff.
Blue's a nice color.
I like blue.
So there you go. Head over to rockler.com. We'll put the link in our show notes if you want to head right to that shop stand configurator and check it all out. Okay, let's get to some questions. Got one from Jose. He says, hey, all, love the show. The question is for Mark, following up on his video on food safe finishes. I wonder what is the right application process for tungue oil? Do you need many coats? You did 4 coats, right? Is there a waiting time, a light sanding in between? I think mineral oil has the benefit of it being potentially easier to apply in a more commercial scale, as in I'm making a batch, and therefore cheaper. And yes, totally get the point that it's easier to apply at the beginning, excuse me, but then you have to reapply it later. So you can argue that it has a higher initial cost, but longer durability. Also, do you know if these finishes would behave differently when it comes to moisture absorption on opposite faces, making the boards cup over time? I make some boards to cover the sink for travel trailers. This covers my hobby costs. Then a couple folks reported that the boards have cupped slightly, which I'm assuming was because of water sitting in the sink for a longer period of time, making the fibers expand at the bottom. Thank you so much. Okay, a lot of questions. See if I could break it down and remember all of these. So the application process is totally variable. When it comes to these oils, it's really about how many do you want to apply? If you are giving them a day or two to dry, and sometimes more than that, it's a question of patience. So a lot of times, you know, after four coats, I'm usually done. Like, I'm usually ready to be done with it, because four coats could mean that it's taken a week to get to that point, and it's still going to take another, you know, 2 to 3 weeks, maybe a month for it to fully cure. Right. So that's something you have to think about too. But generally speaking, at least a few coats, if you can do more, go for it. No need to sand in between. The oils generally are not raising the grain. So I don't usually see benefit to sanding. Let's see. So yeah, I get the argument with mineral oil that it's easier to apply on a commercial scale. But if you're applying anything on a commercial scale, you should probably use the best finish possible, because that means that you're probably selling these things to people. And if you're selling it, excuse me again, the way that you finish it is an integral like part in the success of that piece. So why, this is the argument I don't understand. Like, why would you want to send something out with an inferior finish? Because you have to realize that finish, to the average person who buys your stuff, that is an impression they're going to get about the thing that they bought from you. It's a very important one. So send it out with the best finish possible. And if you give them something that stands up longer and doesn't look like crap after the first use, they're going to like you more and they're going to buy more stuff from you. So I don't understand, even if you save a few bucks with that application method, I think it actually is detrimental in the long run. And you, even on a commercial scale, you might want to consider something else. Let's see. Do you know if these finishes would behave differently? Well, I mean, it's, I think anything, if you put it over a sink and that sink potentially has water or trapped water vapor, you may have problems. It's likely to cause warping. And I don't even know that using tung oil is going to be that much better at that. It's not a layer. It's not impervious to moisture transfer through it. So maybe it will hold up a little bit better, but I don't know. I mean, depending on how the person is using it and how much water exposure is underneath it, I don't know that you're going to really be able to prevent that cupping over time. This is just a fact of how the person is using it. Let's see. Yep, that's about it. I think I hit all the questions. And also, I would like to mention our sponsors at Rockler sell tongue oil. They actually have a Rockler branded tongue oil product, which, if I'm not mistaken, was probably the first tongue oil I ever purchased.
And it's blue. Is it blue?
It's got blue labeling. The bottle is not blue.
It's got blue in it.
Put a little blue trans tint in there.
No, yeah, inside it? Well, yes, it should. Everything should be blue from Rockler. You know, the funny thing
they
was...
They have those ceiling paints that go on pink and dry white, and that's how you know it's covered. They should do the same thing with tongue oil.
That's a good idea. It's on blue. That's how you know it's dry. That was the product I believe I bought in the pursuit of quote-unquote tongue oil from Woodworks.
Oh, gosh.
Before, and I was like, this doesn't do what David Marks said it would do.
It's like, armor seal.
Yeah, because it's not the same stuff. So yeah, thanks Rockler for supplying that to me and teaching me a hard lesson early in my woodworking.
Hey, and you know, if you want quote tongue oil like David Marks use, uh-huh. They sell that at Rockler too.
They do. Just
it's in called the green armor general seal. Finishes can.
Yeah. All right, Shannon, you're up.
This is from Nick, who's building a pair of nightstands, and they have a case made of 4/4 cherry and legs made of 8/4 cherry. The 4/4 I picked up from a local hardware supplier has a light pinkish tone, and the 8/4 that they currently have in stock has deep red-brown tones. I know that cherry comes in a wide range of colors, but I'm unsure how the two will age together. Will the red-brown legs remain relatively stable while the 4/4 darkens so that they match over time, or am I better off waiting until I get my hands on some lighter 8/4? Contrasting tones might even look cool together. I'm a relatively new woodworker, so I don't have a lot of experience with cherry. So the answer is yes.
Yep.
They will kind of blend together over time. Now, certainly, you know, it's wood, it's organic. It you know, you can't expect them to be exactly the same, but I have found that cherry, even like the most disparate cherry colors, tend to come the same after time. In fact, I'm looking at a bedside table I made in cherry 5 years ago. And I distinctly remember the same situation. The 8-quarter that I did for the turn legs was a much deeper color, and the front drawer blades and things, the whole front facade was made out of 4-quarter that was much lighter pink. Mm-hmm. Even after I milled the legs, they were still kind of darker. So that's the other thing, is that 8-quarter may have been sitting on the shelf of the lumberyard for a while, and if you want it to be light pinker, run it through the planer and it'll be nice and pink. But in general, yeah, they will all blend together. If you're really uncertain, take your piece, stick it in the sunshine for the afternoon, and you will be shocked at how much darkening or how much mellowing and blending of the two colors occurs just over the course of like 3 hours in the sunshine. Mm-hmm. Cherry is particularly, I don't want to say notorious, because I think it's wonderful, particularly known for that color change, because there's so much of the commercial market that calls things, quote, cherry, and it's like this deep red mahogany color. Yeah. Like, what the heck is that? And then people see cherry. I remember when I first started in the kind of the craft show circuit, and I was doing cutting boards and boxes, and it's like, oh, that's made out of cherry. And people are like, no, it's not. That's not cherry.
Not dark,
like,
enough.
Yeah, okay. It's not, and they don't expect it to be so light pink in color. So yeah. Easy answer. Stick it in the sun and you'll see it mellow pretty quickly.
And the thing is, if you make enough stuff out of cherry and you leave it natural, you start to really love the variability. There can be some continued variability over time, but it's all like so close in a color family, it makes sense. I think the only time it would stand out is if you had a board that's just naturally, even after it ages and darkens, just naturally a little bit lighter in tone. And it's right in the middle of a bunch of boards that are darker in tone. And what he's talking about with 8-quarter and 4-quarter, it's probably going to be different components on the piece that he's building. So if you have, let's say, lighter color on the top, but your legs are a little bit darker, it all looks fine. It all looks fantastic. It's just Mother Nature's natural variety, but they're all in the same color family. So it looks good.
We have to always kind of step back and look at the whole too. Like as the woodworker, we're agonizing over the 1/8 inch or 1/4 inch reveal between the leg and the apron. And you know, you're so focused on that, and all you see is that color change. But if you like dry fit the whole thing together and like walk across the room and look at it, it looks fine.
Totally.
Because as you said, those colors are close enough; they're in the same palette that it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right, Matt, you're up, and I'm going to go let my dog out.
Okay. All right. This one's from Paul. Paul says, I recently had to remove 2 large ash trees in my backyard to accommodate a home addition. I asked the tree service to leave the trunks as they are beautifully straight and in good shape. I'm considering setting up a chainsaw mill to mill these. The tree guy says he has lots of maple ash and some oak that I could have if I wanted it. These chainsaw mills look kind of sketchy, and I know that they're not as good as a bandsaw mill, but for a small setup, do these work okay? These ash trunks are nearly 2 feet in diameter. So are they too big to try with? Anyway, love the show. Thanks.
So Matt, I want to jump in real quick. Okay. I'm sorry, but this is kind of your life now. Like, you started with a chainsaw mill.
Yeah.
And like, chainsaw mill was perfectly acceptable. But now that you've built a bandsaw mill, like, other people have jumped on, like, whether they built it themselves or they bought like a wood miser. And now that's the norm. And now chainsaws, it's like, oh, well, that's not good.
That's not cool enough. That's not good enough. I'm not going to stoop to that level.
It's not good enough. Is it too sketchy? I don't know. It's just kind of funny how the market has matured. And I guess the next thing is going out and buying obscure commercial properties and turning it into a wood shop. That's the thing now.
Obviously, so, yes.
Yep. Okay. You're welcome.
Good luck. Keeping up with that. So first off, I'm just address the sketchy nature of this. I would argue that using a chainsaw in a mill setup is far less sketchy and more safe than using a chainsaw freehand to cut anything. With that chainsaw in that mill, it's not really going to go anywhere. It's well restrained, and your tip, where your kickback will occur, is not even in the cut. So you have zero kickback risk-ish. I won't say zero, but like, it's almost zero risk of it kicking back on you. And that's the dangerous part of the chainsaw, is if you get in the kickback zone of the tip, it will throw that whole freaking bar in your face. So that's why you hold the saw off to one side, because it will come straight up. And if you're looking straight over it, it will hit you in the face.
Oof.
And it will not be a good day for you. So make sure you got a kickback brake on there and make sure you don't put your face directly in line with the bar when you're doing like chainsaw cutting. But again, with the mill setup, the chainsaw is in that thing. It's kind of held in there and just kind of feeding it through the log. And most of the bar, a lot of times, is completely contained within the log. So you're not like near the cutting bits at all either. So I think safety wise, as far as chainsaws go, in a mill, safer than just out cutting whatever. And also, like, if you're cutting down like a tree or something, you got like all these forces that you're releasing that could fall on you. Mm-hmm. Like with the chainsaw mill, you're like, it's on the ground already. Like nothing's falling on you. You're not releasing tension that's going to like kick the whole log in your face either. So much less sketchy. So I think it's a good idea to like, to, if you're just trying to jump into it. I always say that when people are like, oh, should I get a chainsaw mill or should I just like go get a bandsaw mill or what should I do? I'm not really sure what I want to do yet. I'm like, regardless of what method you go with, you're going to need a chainsaw. If you go the chainsaw milling route, you might need a bigger one, but regardless, you're still going to need that chainsaw for cutting logs, trimming things, whatever. Whether you have a bandsaw mill or a chainsaw mill, you still need a chainsaw. So your actual startup cost of like going to a chainsaw mill is really just the mill attachment itself. If you're trying to get into this, so you're like looking at a couple $100 to kind of try it and get into it. So it has a very low cost of entry. And if you're not doing a whole lot of stuff, like how much speed do you really need? Like if you're only cutting up like 4 logs a year or something, if it takes you 4 days to cut those logs versus 1 day to cut those logs, does that matter to you? I mean, probably not. So I would just do it. And then you'll figure out like, do I actually like this? Do I actually like having wood everywhere in my whole life? Like having stacks of wood everywhere? Is that a lifestyle for me? Or is that too much? And then all you have is a chainsaw mill to get rid of, not a whole bandsaw.
Nice. I recently talked to David Barman of Epilogue Lumber over in the Lumber Update show, and he was really pushing the whole Alaskan mill idea just because of its kind of scalability. And I never really thought about that. It's like, you know, you can put a longer bar, you know, assuming you've got a decent enough engine, motor, whatever you want to call it, whether it's gas, powder, or electric, on the chainsaw machine itself, you can put a longer bar on it and do, you know, so many things. And he was talking about getting into this idea. It's funny because we have some kickback that says when we talked about going full Cremona when it comes to resawing, it's like there are ways to go half Cremona or three quarter Cremona just by doing with an Alaskan mill. So yeah, you don't always have to go full Cremona.
And that's definitely like the advantage of the chainsaw mills is the scalability. So you can cut some really, really big stuff without having to like go and get a whole nother setup. You can kind of add to it as you need. And to kind of go back to Paul's question about the size of these trees, 2 foot in diameter is a pretty good size for a chainsaw mill. And if you wanted to cut something 3 feet in diameter, you just need a bigger bar. Or you get a bigger bar to start with, and you can cut 2 feet, you can cut 3 feet, you can cut 4 feet with like a 5 foot bar if you have one of those. So it's definitely scalable and to a lot lower cost and disruption than like, I bought a bandsaw mill, but it only cuts 2 feet in diameter. I have a 3 foot diameter log. Now I got to go buy a bigger bandsaw mill. Or something?
No.
Yes.
Okay.
As yes, you do.
Yes. Yes.
You know, this
says
might
your local
be
a wood miser rep.
Right. This might be a good topic for a future show, but you touched on it, Shannon, and it's something I've been thinking about a lot lately, is the normalization of ridiculousness.
So sorry. Like,
maybe I'll give you an example here and then maybe we'll save it for a future show. But I just
love the phrasing normalization of ridiculousness. That's awesome.
I just got a trailer to help just haul stuff and get things back and forth between the shop and whatnot is very useful out here. And I got multiple people asking me if I made it. And I said, no, I bought it like a normal freaking person. And if you look around the community and the maker community,
who asked you if you made a trailer? Like, is it just on Instagram at all?
Well, when have you ever seen me work with metal?
What are you doing?
Pick up a welder? Like, this is not for me.
What have they seen you welding?
But here's the thing. The whole maker community as a whole is just incredibly talented with a lot of different specialties And Matt, you're sort of an anomaly in the things that you're to do and like willing to do at the same time.
I think the term is freak.
Yeah, a little bit of a freak. Yeah. Just being like a real Renaissance man. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Take that,
but
it's Shannon.
Brought it. Yeah. Oops. Sorry. TM. My bad. Should have used bad choice of words. I'm sorry. But the fact that that is ironic if you think about it, because you're kind of specialized, Shannon, and you really only do one thing. So, I mean, is that really the best moniker for you at this point?
See, at the time, I like where this is going. I'm was this. Just this as good. Woodworking. Back in 2007, Mark, you remember then.
Right? I do. I was alive.
When it was just you, me, and Vanderlust?
Yeah. That was Variety at the time. So I don't know. This trend of seeing really talented people in their specialties doing these amazing things and then making other people like asking other people like, why aren't you doing that? Is because I'm a freaking normal person and I do woodworking. I don't build trailers. Like if I built a trailer, I don't even know that it would be roadworthy or, you know, like it wouldn't be safe to haul things behind my truck. So, yeah, that was fun.
I could just picture Mark like taking a piece of plywood and like putting some hardwood like skids on the bottom of it and just dragging that behind the
truck.
Why
isn't this working? I mean, I made a sled for the kids with wood runners. It was terrible. You know why? Because metal does that better. But I don't do metal. Oh, good times. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us today. Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head over to rockler.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Woohoo. A whole lot of rock.
It's a lot of beans.
Okay. We were back, folks. We had to take that month hiatus. So send us some questions. Most importantly, as you're driving down the road, what are the factors that go to your mind that say, hey, you know what? It's okay to make a U-turn there. Let us know. We want to know.
Is someone working there? That looks good.
So send us that information. Go to woodtalkshow.com. You can fill out the form there or just send us an email at woodtalkshow@gmail.com. You can also find us over on Instagram at woodtalkshow. We'd love to hear from you there as well.
Awesome. Well,
that's it.
We're glad to be back, guys. We hope you are enjoying the show. And oh, by the way, 3 shows for the next couple months because we're making up for lost time. So we will see you more than usual. And we hope you enjoy it. So great. Thanks for listening.
Committed us to it.
Yeah. Enjoy. All right. We'll see you later, guys.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.